consideration. But in the past, we see they always have considered the spiritual profundity to be the ultimate criteria for their spiritual or for their civilization or the depth of their civilization. And especially this culture was very effectively cultivated in the land of India. And the culture, the spiritual culture, was not a matter of mental speculation or even philosophical understanding, but this knowledge had always been, the knowledge has come down since time immemorial from very, very bona fide sources. Especially when you go to the Vedic culture, Vedic literatures, then we see how at the beginning of creation, the knowledge about the spiritual reality and the knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead had been imparted by the Lord Himself to the first created being. And that knowledge has been recorded in the form of the Vedas, and in India, the Vedic literatures have been considered to be the bona fide means of understanding the spiritual reality and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vedic culture had been established on that knowledge. And accordingly, the Vedic society had been divided into four varnas: the intellectual class, the administrative class, the business community, and the working class. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declared that this division had been made by Himself. Chaturvarnam maya shrishta guna karma vibhagasaha. These four varnas have been created by me, Krishna is declaring, according to the modes of material nature and according to one's propensity. And that was the foundation of the civilized human society. The intellectual class, the administrative and warrior class, then the traders or the business community, Vaishya, and the working class. And when you look at the human society, we see that every human society has these four classes of people. Even when Srila Prabhupada went to Russia, where they were trying to create a classless society, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that there also they have these four classes of people. In communist Russia, Srila Prabhupada pointed out there are the intellectual class. There are administrative class. And Prabhupada pointed out that although you do not allow a free enterprise, you do not allow people to have their own, run their own business, but still there is a business is going on in black market. People, those who have that propensity, they can't help it. They just go out and make money on their own. Since the government doesn't allow them free trading, to run a free enterprise, they are doing it undercover in the form of black market. And the Sudra and the working class, yes, the entire Russian society is considered to be, at that time, considered to be the working class, the worker, labor class people. Prabhupada also pointed anywhere, if you even go to the middle of a jungle in a so-called barbaric society, even there we'll find these four classes. Among them also they have these four classes. They have the intellectual class or the priests. They have naturally the warriors. They have traders and they have the workers. So civilized human society was based on these four classes, varnashram. And a human life A civilized human life was divided into four varnas, four stages. I'm sorry, four ashrams. There were four stages. The first phase was student life. Then the householder life. Then the life of retirement. And then finally, the renounced order. Leaving everything behind, and they are trying to dedicate themselves completely for their spiritual progress. So these four ashrams are also a symptom of a civilized human society. So the Vedic society was based on these four varnas, or four divisions, and four ashrams. And the goal of life was to free oneself from the material bondage and become situated on the spiritual platform. And in the Vedic society, they had a very clear understanding. Even an illiterate person also, a worker also, who was a kind of a servant or a very simple person, also had this understanding very clear understanding about the difference between matter and soul, matter and spirit. It's a matter of perception, actually, and common sense. Like in India, I have seen, like, a simple person, even a cobbler, whose business is to just mend the shoes, or a sweeper in the street, also had this understanding that there is a thing called spirit soul. He had the understanding that his real identity is the spirit soul, not this body. He had the understanding that the soul is eternal. The soul doesn't die. It's the body that dies. And the death means the soul's departure from the body. Unfortunately, due to the very, very intense materialistic influence, due to intense industrialization, intense mechanization, today's so-called civilized world has become atheistic. That is, they do not want to accept the presence of God. They do not want to accept the presence of the spirit soul. And of course, the most unfortunate aspect is that there is no systematic education about this knowledge. But if we just consider, let's try to make a common sense approach. I won't even call it an intelligent approach. I'll say, let's make a very common sense approach. In this room, do we see that there are different types of objects in this room? Can you tell me about one? Just name one object in this room. The wall, say. Now, is this wall living or inert? The wall is inert. Can you tell me another object? Microphone. Is it living or inert? It's inert. This table is inert. This seat is inert. Right? But you, are you inert or living? You're living. Right? Now, what causes you to be alive? Well, this sit is inert. What is the reason that you are living? Okay, consciousness. Where does the consciousness come from? You're jumping to a conclusion. Okay, let's consider, like, there is a difference, right, between inert matter and living being. Like, we all are living being. Whereas these are inert matter, right? Now, our body is also made of matter, right? This body that we have, these bodies are made of matter, but still these bodies are living. What causes this body to be alive? There's something that makes it alive. What is that something? The soul, right? Now, if somebody wants to make an even more systematic or rational approach, then we can consider that, well, now, say here I am and I'm speaking to you all, and you all are thinking at the back of your mind that Maharaj is here and he's speaking, right? But if I drop dead, my body will be lying here, but you will say that he's gone, isn't it? Although my body will be lying here, you will say he is gone. So who is that he? Who is gone? Right. That is actually real me. When that soul was in the body was alive. And as soon as the soul leaves the body becomes dead. And then this dead body and this seed doesn't have any difference. The dead body is inert and this wall and this seat or microphone and the floor, like them, this body also becomes inert. So it is the presence of the soul that causes the body to be alive and causes consciousness in the body. Right? Now, isn't it a common sense understanding? Right? Does it need a hell of a lot of... I'm sorry. Does it need an awful lot of intelligence to understand that? Not really. That's why, you see, it's a matter of education. It's a matter of exposure to the right kind of understanding. That's why I was saying in India, even a cobbler or a sweeper has this understanding that he is not his body, he is a spirit soul. And according to the Vedic understanding, civilized person is he who knows the difference between matter and soul. Civilization is not a matter of building skyscrapers and having nice roadways and communication system. The real civilization was a matter of awareness of the spirit soul. And in that civilized society, the entire structure was made in, entire structure was motivated by this spiritual awareness. How to become free from the material bondage and come to the spiritual understanding. I mean, not only in India, a couple of hundred years back, even in Europe, people had that goal as the ultimate goal of their life. Like if we see the Christian Europe, they're very, very spiritually oriented people, spiritually inclined people. And now, in the past, this spiritual progress was a very gradual, and it was designed in a very systematic way. One is to gradually make spiritual advancement. For example, those who are situated in a mode of ignorance, who are considered to be the lowest of mankind, they were gradually elevated to the mode of passion, and then from mode of passion, they were elevated to the mode of goodness. And then finally, they were brought into the transcendental mode beyond the material nature. And it's a long, drawn-out process. It needs a lot of time, it needs a lot of sincere endeavor, and it needs a lot of intellectual ability. But in this age, particularly in the age that started about 5,000 years ago, which is known as the Iron Age or the most degraded age of all ages, people have become totally unconcerned about their spiritual need. They have become so motivated by their materialistic objectives and goals that they do not have any concern about their spiritual progress. What to speak of concern about their spiritual progress, they don't even accept the presence of the spirit soul. They don't accept the presence of God, who is the supreme spirit, the supreme spiritual being. Now, in order to deliver this very degraded individuals of this age, the Lord appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And appearing as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave a very simple process for spiritual advancement. His proposal is, just accept that God exists. Just accept the existence of God and try to glorify Him. Just try to glorify Him. And in order to secure your efforts for your spiritual advancement, remain in the association of the saintly people, those who also believe in God and those who also try to make spiritual advancement. So he gave a very, very simple process. In other ages, the process for spiritual advancement was very, very complex, very arduous, and very time-consuming. It used to take a long, long time. Say, for example, there had been instances where individuals were trying to attain their spiritual perfection through meditation, and they tried for thousands of years, literally thousands of years, and still they could not attain their spiritual perfection. It had happened. Many such cases of failures are there. But where is the possibility of a living entity making such endeavor in this age? The lifespan of an individual is barely 100 years. If one lives for 60, 70 years, one thinks, he lived for such a long time. And and besides that, the people have become so weak. Their intellectual ability is so feeble. And their will is so practically non-existent. So how will they make such spiritual advancement through such arduous processes? Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this very simple process of just chanting the holy name of the Lord. But this chanting the holy name of the Lord is the essence of all spiritual culture. It is the ultimate spiritual activity, actually. There are different ways of spiritual advance. There are different grades or different stages of spiritual advancement. But at the ultimate stage of spiritual advancement, one actually makes such direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as to address Him directly. The other processes, for example, they would gradually, through the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, they will come into the Gyanakanda. Like, first they will try to act according to the Vedic injunctions in order to fulfill their desires. Now, that is the basic purpose of the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. You want to enjoy? Okay. You can enjoy. But these are the ways that you have to enjoy. But then when one would realize that in spite of all my endeavor for enjoyment, I am still that same old frustrated individual. All my efforts for enjoyment is ultimately leading to disappointment and frustration. So then he would start to consider why, in spite of so much endeavor, I cannot enjoy. So that actually takes him to the Gyanakanda section of the Vedas, which actually intellectually tries to give him the understanding of that why, answer to those why. Why am I suffering? I do not want to suffer, but why am I suffering? An example for that is Gautam Buddha. He was born as a prince. And his father was aware that he may renounce his royal position and become a mendicant. So he decided that he'll never allow him to know what suffering is, what distress is, what misery is. And throughout his entire life, until he grew up to be a young man, he did not know what suffering was. And then finally he was married, he had a child. Then his father, the king, thought, okay, now he's safe. He has been pretty well tied up to the materialistic way of family life. So then he was allowed to go out for the first time out of the precincts of the palace. And he went out, and when he went out in a chariot, for the first time he saw an old man. His body was bent with age, old age. His skin was wrinkled and he was somehow staggering with a stick. So Buddha asked the chariot driver, "Who is that?" His chariot driver, Mathali, told him that he's an old man. What's an old man? So he explained what's an old man. For the first time, Buddha saw an old man. Then he saw another person lying by the side of the road and writhing in pain. So Buddha asked him, a chariot driver, "What's that? Who is that?" And he said, "Well, he is suffering from some disease." "What's a disease?" He explained what a disease was. For the first time, Buddha learned what a disease was. And then he saw some people were carrying somebody on a bamboo cot. And Buddha asked, "What's happened to that? What's that? Why they're carrying him like this?" He said, "Well, he's dead. They're taking him to the crematorium to burn his body." So he asked, "What is death?" And he told him what death was. Then Buddha asked him, "Will that happen to me also?" He said, "Yes, it'll happen to you also." And by the way, when he asked and saw an old man and he got the answer, "Who is an old man?" He asked, "Will I also become old?" He said, "Yes, you'll also become old." "Will I become diseased?" "Yes, you'll also become diseased." "Will I die?" "Yes, you'll also die." Then Buddha said, "Okay, stop the chariot." And he took off his royal robes and ornaments and gave it to the chariot driver, said, "You go back home. I'm going out to find out how to conquer this old age, disease, and death." So this is the point of knowledge. One tries to find out through intellectual understanding why these sufferings are inflicted upon us, why we become subjected to these sufferings. And Vedas very systematically pointed out why we are suffering in this material nature. Then it leads to the point, what is this material nature? And the conclusion is, this material nature is a place of suffering, and this body is a wonderful instrument for receiving pain. Okay, now let's consider that point also. What is this body? As I mentioned, that it's a wonderful instrument for receiving pain. How many of you agree with me on that point? How many of you disagree with me? Okay, I know, although you are not disagreeing, but still, I'll make this point just to point out how systematic the Vedic approach is. The Vedic approach is not at all blind or speculative. Okay. Take any part of your body. Save any part of your body. Say your little finger. Right? Consider in how many different ways you can inflict pain this little finger. Huh? You can think of so many ways to inflict pain to this little finger. Now you consider in how many different ways you can give pleasure to this little finger. Can you think of something? Now mind you, this principle applies to every single part of your body. Every single part of your body. You can inflict pain in so many different ways, but you cannot give pleasure. Practically, there is no way you can give pleasure to this body. Now, can't we very easily conclude that this body is a wonderful machine or wonderful instrument to receive pain? And then this material nature is a place of suffering. This material nature is a place of suffering, and this body that we have, that we are identifying ourselves with, is a wonderful instrument to receive pain. Now tell me why we are here in this material nature. Now they already, as I pointed out earlier, they already found out the difference between the body and the soul, matter and spirit. Right? And they recognize that their real identity is spiritual. So now, won't it be the natural endeavor to situate themselves in the spiritual identity? So that was the Vedic conclusion. And now how to become situated in our spiritual identity? There were many systematic processes. And one of them, which is the ultimate consideration of the spiritual progress, is Ashtanga Yoga. Through the process of Ashtanga Yoga, one used to recognize the difference between the matter and spirit, and they would project the entire consciousness to their spiritual identity, and in this way they would recognize the presence of the Supreme Spiritual Personality in the heart as the Super Soul. And when one would establish that relationship with the Super Soul, and he would recognize himself as a minute spirit soul, then comes the natural consideration of surrender. When a person recognizes his minuteness and somebody's greatness, now in the light of his greatness, when he recognizes his minuteness or insignificant situation, then isn't it natural that he would surrender himself to him? And that was the ultimate consideration of yoga through samadhi. Samadhi is a state when a living entity would perceive the supreme spiritual personality of Godhead in the heart as the Super Soul. And that would automatically lead to surrender himself to that supreme personality of Godhead. Now this surrender to the Lord, in Sanskrit it is called Sharanagati or Prapatti, is the basis of devotional service to the Lord. When we surrender, then what do? We surrender. But through the surrender, there is a natural consideration of service to Him. When I surrender to Him, I naturally want to do something for Him. And that action is called loving devotional service. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this highest achievement, highest spiritual achievement, in the highest spiritual platform to the living entities of this age. There is no way of going step by step through Karmakanda and Ganakanda and then come to the platform of bhakti. It was given directly. And not only he gave it directly, but he gave the highest spiritual achievement, the most elevated spiritual practice, to the living entities of this age, to us. Now when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years ago, he distributed this throughout India. But he wanted that it should spread all over the world. Not that only the people who are in India will be fortunate enough to receive the benefit from his gift, But he wanted that to spread all over the world. That is, the people from all over the world will have access to this process. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent a very special personality. He made a prediction that this movement would spread throughout the world in every town and village. And in order to make it happen, he sent someone. And that personality is Srila Prabhupada. We can see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he made a prediction which is practically impossible. 50 years back, many of you are not even born at that time. But if 50 years back, somebody told that this, you know, this there is a movement called Hare Krishna movement, that would spread throughout the world and they would be chanting and dancing. Would anyone ever believe in America that some Indian culture like that would spread? Dravida Prabhu, about 40 years back, if somebody told you, what would you think? Or even, practically it's impossible, right? I mean, no man in his normal condition would be able to accept that a thing like that could happen. But then Prabhupada comes and within a short span of 10 years' time, he just spreads this movement all over the world. And it's a miracle. Prabhupada himself used to say that this is the greatest miracle. People are so much fascinated by miracles. When somebody makes a motor car disappear, they think it's a big deal. Or somebody produces some ash or some cash from the thin air. You know, people think it's a very, very fascinating. They become very fascinated by that. But actually the greatest miracle has been performed by Srila Prabhupada. That is this Krishna consciousness movement, the spiritual awareness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the perfect understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and a means to re-establish our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been available throughout the world today. This is the greatest miracle. It's an impossible fit. It was something that is impossible, but that has become possible. Now, how did it become possible? It became possible because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted it to happen, and he made it happen. And in order to make it happen, he sent this very special devotee of his. And that is Srila Prabhupada. Now, the problem is, we are actually very close to Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, we are not able to recognize Srila Prabhupada's true greatness. A very great personality his greatness cannot be understood or recognized when we are in a very close proximity of that person. Just like a very tall mountain, a very high mountain, its height cannot be recognized or appreciated, measured, when we are very close to it. A small little hill in front of us may obscure that mountain. But as we move away from the mountain, the farther we go, we perceive its height. So similarly, the more we move away from Prabhupada in time, the more this world moves away from Prabhupada in time, it will be able to recognize Srila Prabhupada's greatness more and more. Actually, what Srila Prabhupada gave, with our tiny little perception, we cannot even fathom, we cannot even figure out that greatness of his gift. At least we are fortunate that we somehow or other we have accepted Srila Prabhupada's mercy and trying to mold our lives according to Srila Prabhupada's teachings. That is our good fortune, but rest of the world is not really aware of Srila Prabhupada's greatness. But the world will become more and more aware of Srila Prabhupada's greatness as the world moves away from Srila Prabhupada in time. And a time will come when Prabhupada will be recognized as the, not only one of the greatest, but the greatest spiritual personality of this age. And you know what is another prediction? That all the religions of this world will come under the banner of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. That is, all the religions of this world will become unified under Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Because people will recognize that ultimately all the religions are speaking about what Srila Prabhupada gave. For example, once some Roman Catholic priest came to see Srila Prabhupada when he was in New York, and they asked him, why are you converting these Christian boys and girls into Hindus? Prabhupada's answer was, no, I'm not converting the Christians into Hindus or Muslims into Jews. I'm simply making better Christians out of the Christians, better Jews out of the Jews, better Muslims out of the Muslims, and better Hindus out of the Hindus. That's what real spiritual process does. It simply places us in the perfect spiritual understanding. And then we can declare very boldly, yes, we are perfect Christians. We are perfect Jews. We are perfect Muslims. And we are perfect Hindus. Because all the religions are ultimately revealing us about the identity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and showing us the way to re-establish our relationship with Him. And that is what Srila Prabhupada actually gave, following the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I thought, since next week is Srila Prabhupada's memorial festival, we'll briefly try to discuss about who Srila Prabhupada is and what is his greatness. Why he is such a special personality. And the more we become aware of this fact, the more we will benefit ourselves. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question or comment? Okay, thank you, Hare Krishna. Yes, you have a question? Kali Yuga will end in Pralaya. Yeah, okay, but that is another 427,000 years from now. So that is the very end of the age of Kali. But we are talking about next 10,000 years. Hare Krishna. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, very good, very good point. Yeah, you see, when the individuals are more capable, the process for spiritual achievement is apparently more difficult. But it is not that difficult. You see, difficult and easy is a matter of one's ability in doing it. Say, I was trying to learn French, and I told my teacher that French is very difficult. She told me, no, French is very easy. He said, in France, even children speak French. So you see, when you can do something, then it's easy. When you can't do something, then it's difficult. Right? So those days, you know, like say in Satyayuga, people were very, very able, very competent, very capable. Therefore, the way they would achieve their spiritual perfection was apparently difficult, but not for them. But now that we have become absolutely useless, right? The Lord's mercy has come down to pick us up. We can't even stand on our own feet, so He has come to pick us up. You see, He is the Supreme Merciful Personality. He is the Father. Right? So, just as the Father becomes most caring and compassionate to the weakest child, and especially when he is sick, so the Lord's mercy has come down to pick us up when we are the weakest and sick children of His. Thank you, Haribol. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.